of the administrative services that go on within our agency. And that's made up of, obviously, my office, the deputy, our human resources person, the folks we have to have to operate the or take care of the administrative tasks that we all have. Additionally, the things that we have going on in that division are our administrative division, and they're taking care of the payments. We have a lot of payments that we process through our office. As I mentioned, we're revenue generating, so we have a lot of royalties coming in. We have a lot of loan payments coming in. They're taking care of that. We also have our royalty compliance folks within that division, and they are processing all the royalty payments that we get, as well as performing audits of those royalty payments. We like to make sure that we are, in fact, getting all the money that is owed to us under our mineral leases, and so they are taking care of that for us right now. Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 16, that's where you see the budget. That's generally what we do, but that is where you see the budget for that unit. That unit's total budget is around $4.7 million. And again, they're processing all of the payments and taking care of those things within our office. We do recommend a reduction in this budget. As you see, we recommend a $63,288 reduction in our administrative and support division. And this is what I think all agencies, I've been listening to some of the previous hearings, this is what I think all agencies are referring to as the governor's enterprise reductions. And just to remind you what those were statewide budget reductions that are associated with employees' group insurance rate, the budget reductions in that fund, as well as the removal of the Converse County housing allowance. Those amounts were loaded by the budget division into our budget.
Going back to page 14, you talk about the State Loan and Investment Board retains an investment consultant to assist with the statutory responsibilities. Who is that consultant, and what does that consultant do, and how much do you pay that consultant?
Mr. Chairman, the consultant currently is RBK, and it's important to note that some of the funding comes through our office and our budget, but a good portion of the funding for that consultant comes through the treasurer's office. That consultant currently is RBK. They just went out we just had another RFP recently last year. They selected RVK again, and they provide us those services. The amount of our budget that gets expended towards RVK would be in our 900 series, the professional fees, and I believe it to be the full amount. The full amount, so the $610,000 you see there, the $610,836, that amount goes to RBK for the biennium.
So that was my question. So if you're paying roughly $305,000 a year as your portion, what portion does the treasurer pay? In other words, do you know how much we're paying that consultant?
Mr. Chairman, I actually don't know the number that comes from the treasurer's office. We send our money to the treasurer's office, and they take care of the contracting for that. So I'm not sure of the total amount of the contract.
And then how much is your interaction as an agency with this consultant?
Mr. Chairman, the interaction with the consultant takes place at the treasurer's office. Our interaction comes at the board meetings. So we help staff the State Loan and Investment Board, who reviews the annual policy, who makes decisions related to the investments, but we don't have one-on-one interaction with the consultant ourselves. Thank you.
So on page 16, so the code 196, that is the entire housing allowance? That's that entire reduction is the housing allowance from Converse County. What else is it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that was comprised of three various things. Again, the budget division noticed this, but my understanding is those changes, those reductions are associated with, one, the employees' group insurance rate holiday, the employees' group insurance stable rate budget reductions, and the removal of the Converse County housing allowance. So it's comprised of all those three things made up the governor's enterprise reductions.
I'm not that familiar with your office, so I was wondering if I could ask on a couple of other big-ticket items you have in your budget.
Sure.
One is code 242, DP reproduct, other equal. What does that mean?
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's our computer rotation.
Okay, so that's what you're paying to...
To have computers in our office and then
rotate
them on.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember
on.
The name of the agency.
Mr. Chairman,
Enterprise
ETS?
Technologies.
That is correct.
Okay, and then code 292, $500,000, maintenance contracts external.
Mr. Chairman, in this division, we have our royalty compliance section, and we have an internal computer system that allows us to track all of those royalty payments that are coming in and the deductions through a computer system. And so the legislature has allowed us to fund an external contract with those folks for what we call our LARC system, our leasing and royalty compliance system. So that is payments for...
So that $500,000 is a biannual expense for IT?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I don't know if I would consider it IT, but yes, it's computer based. It's the folks that keep that system, our royalty compliance system, going. So it isn't going to enterprise technology. We've been allowed to have an external contract to take care of that system for us. They built the system custom for us, and then they continually update it and are on site to make sure that runs for us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Field work here. There we go. Mr. Chairman, thank you. On that note, I guess when was that bid out, and how often do you review the contract on that to decide whether that's a fair expense or not, or how do you evaluate the cost of that?
Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, originally that contract was bid out. And so we went through the RFP process, and we selected the folks that built it for us. Once it was built, it became harder to bid out. So right now we're talking about that's maintenance payments. That's updating and keeping our system going. So since the time that it was bid out and built, we do use a sole source. We get sole source authority to contract with them. Every 2 years, we look at that. We're very pleased with the services that they provide for us. But our contract goes every 2 years, and we do look at it every 2 years to make sure that's something that works for us still. They are on site. The folks from Gannett Peak actually come to our office, so they're there on site. We can ask them questions daily and do, and they additionally provide us some other consulting, I think, just as a nature of our relationship, about other ways that our other systems, our other computer systems, can interface with that. But we do review it every 2 years. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll dispense with the new that I'm new and I don't understand. In terms of the royalty compliance section, is there overlap with the Department of Revenue in terms of the analysis done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swartz, there's not necessarily with the Department of Revenue. They're collecting taxes, and their responsibility is for taxes. We, on the other hand, are collecting royalty, our share of our ownership of those minerals. And so the Department of Revenue isn't doing that for us. The one place that you might see some overlap would be we do contact the Department of Revenue sometimes to see if the amount that producers have produced and reported to the Department of Revenue is equal to the amount they've reported to us that they have produced. But the actual business of the Department of Revenue and the things that they are doing are not the same as ours. The one place you might see overlap would be sometimes with the Department of Audit. So when the Department of Audit undertakes a full audit of a company, because we are also collecting at some point in time the federal share, when they undertake a full audit of a company, they will look at our share as well and make sure that the state's royalty share and the amounts that we think we are entitled to is similar with that. So we'd overlap a little bit with the Department of Audit, but not necessarily the Department of Revenue. Thank you. You're welcome. All right. If we have no further questions on Unit 101, I could move on to our next unit. Our next unit, and this is where our second reduction appears, our next unit is our trust land management unit. And this is one of our bigger units. And generally, I would describe our trust land management unit as taking care of all of the lands. So they're the folks. We have a surface unit that is taking care of the leasing of the state land of the surface. And we have a mineral unit that is taking care of, obviously, the subsurface and the minerals that we're taking care of. There's also various ways that we use the surface to raise revenue through easements, temporary use permits, and those all take place within our trust land management unit.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bridget, the land sale swap, whatever, in Teton County, have we received that money yet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, we did in December sell one of those parcels, one of the 640, for the $46 million that was deposited in the Common School Permanent Land Fund back in December. I want to say the 12th, but mid-December we did receive that payment. Of course, we still have one more parcel within the park, and it's 640 acres.
Mr. Chairman, and we're still working on that parcel then also.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, we would like to do something with that parcel. Obviously, the authority we had to sell it to the National Park Service ran out in December of this year. One of the things we continue to talk with them about it, and maybe we could pursue an exchange or try to think about that. But the authority we had from you to sell them that parcel ran out in December 31st of 2016.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Bridget, on page 23 under your mineral leasing section there, the last paragraph, second line, you talk about including over-the-counter leased oil and gas parcels. What's an over-the-counter leased parcel, if you could explain that to me?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, over-the-counter for us means that it's gone through the process. So what are twice? Our rules provide that we offer any parcel of state land for auction at the 16 2/3 royalty at one public auction. You know, we have oral auctions that folks come to. If it is not leased, we offer it a second time at a different auction at the 12.5% royalty rate. If it is not leased it there at the 12.5, it goes on the over-the-counter list. And so anybody could come in and lease a parcel off the over-the-counter list for the minimum bid, which is $1 an acre. And so we've been trying to increase some interest in our over-the-counter leases. One of the things we did is we went to an electronic system or an electronic service. You might have heard about this. It's been in the paper. BLM is maybe going to use this system. It kind of almost sounds like eBay for mineral leases. But the very nice thing about it is they've got this It's called EnergyNet, and they provide a service for leasing of minerals. The state of North Dakota uses it. The state of Colorado uses it. The state of Utah uses it. They've gone away from the traditional in-person oral auction, and they've used that for leasing, and the BLM is exploring it. We started to dip our feet into that pool of taking the leases that we have on the over-the-counter list and listing them with EnergyNet to see if we could cast a wider net and get some folks that aren't just operating in Wyoming. Basically, when you do that, I think you're chasing bonus money. You're chasing a little bit of bonus money for somebody who would bid on a lease at a higher rate than the over-the-counter rate.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, so that over-the-counter rate still, it remains at the 12.5% royalty. And then, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Director, if can you help me understand how we do the royalties? Do you get in the on the royalty issue on reservation leases, or is that all federal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that's all federal.
Thank
we
you.
Don't have anything to do with that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, thank you. You folks, I assume, are subject to the Sage-Grouse executive order. So I've been asked this question in the last year. Have there been any mineral leasing projects or mineral projects that have been slowed down or stopped by the executive order on state lands that you guys have the authority?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I would submit not. What we do, how we comply with the executive order, is we stip a lease. So let me clarify. let me clarify my response there. So when we're preparing the list of leases that would go out for auction, we look to see whether they're in a sage-grouse core area. If they are, we put stipulations on the lease consistent with the executive order, that would generally be timing stipulations. And so those go on the lease. We lease them out. There's no delay in that. So there's no delay in the leasing part from us. Now, the delay it might cause would be once an operator has that lease with that stipulation on it, they obviously have to comply. And some of that is timing restrictions. But my understanding from talking with folks in industry, that's something they can deal with and plan for. We aren't holding them up as the BLM is to place those stipulations on it. Getting an APD from the BLM in a sage-grouse area is problematic. Now, obviously, my office isn't granting APDs. That's something taken care of at the OGCC. But I've already stipped the lease compliant with that, so they know they already have to do that, and getting the APD from the OGCC is not problematic like it is with the federal government. So, again, there might be, Representative Summers, I don't want to suggest there's no problem when you're dealing with the state. There are timing stipulations on that, but it's my understanding from them it's not onerous like it is with the federal government to comply with those. They do have to plan ahead, make sure they're not planning to be out there drilling in the middle of sagegrass season, but generally I think it's something they can deal with.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess could you get a list of how many leases are impacted by that STIP so I can at least answer the question that was posed to me by
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I'm sure that is something we could do. It'll take us a space of time, but we'll get it right
fine.
To you.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I just want to make sure we're taking a note so I don't forget. Yes, that is something we could do. So with regard to this budget, this unit's budget then, we have one reduction here. The reduction we're offering in this unit is $59,021. Again, that's a governor's enterprise reduction, as I've already described. If there are no further questions in our trust land management.
On page 26, down in the 900 series, 901 and 903, I was curious what the professional fees are, but I was especially curious about the special projects and services.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, so our 900 series in this unit is generally used for things like appraisals. When we're doing trust land management exchanges or sales, we have to get an appraisal. So we would use that for appraisals. We would use it for other things that we might need with regard to state land. We additionally, when you're looking at the special projects and services, that's an amount that you provided that the legislature appropriated to us for our grazing system that we're updating right now. We're right in the process of switching grazing lease systems, and I mean computer systems, and so some of our fees go to that. Additionally, within these 900 series monies is our trust preservation and enhancement account. You might have heard of that before. Those are monies that the legislature has allowed us to appropriate to use to preserve our assets. So I would think of a typical project. One of the ones we do would be a timber stand improvement, where we're able to leverage federal funds, get about 50% federal funds, 50% funds from that project or from that account from us to do timber stand improvement and improve our forest health, thereby preserving our assets. Other things that we would might maybe do is if we find a problem out on state lands as far as we have some folks, some irresponsible parties making a mess of state lands and we're unable to track them down and make them pay that amount, we would use that fund to restore our land. So
yeah, I've got a parcel lease to share it and you have to keep closing.
Right. They drive off the roads. They right. make a muck, and we use that fund.
Just so I understand the cash flow here, this money that you're spending on these projects and so forth is general fund dollars, but the income you receive from the leases and let's say timbering contracts and so forth, does that go into the school foundation or the permanent school land fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, it does track. It does track where the beneficiary is. So you say school, but there's a few other beneficiaries out there. But yes, revenue generated on state lands goes into those permanent funds. Either the permanent
mostly school.
Mostly school, 86% school. Mostly the corpus fund, but sometimes the income fund. But yes, that's something we've chosen to do in this state is still nevertheless generally fund the Office of State Lands and Investments and keep that revenue, going to those permanent funds. We've never used, any of that revenue historically in this state to fund the Office of State Lands and Investments. There are states that do that. That's not something we've chosen to do in this state.
About you have just a round figure of how much money you're generating for these various school funds.
Sure, I could tell you. I happen to bring with me. We report this every time we're in front of the Joint Agriculture Committee. We report the revenue that we've generated in the year for those funds. The most recent report that we presented to the Joint Agriculture Committee, and this would be for fiscal year 2016, we generated $172,867,379 go to the permanent fund.
$172 million?
$172 million.
Okay. You didn't mention the word million in there.
Oh, did I not? Let me round. $172.8 million went into the permanent funds. And that's in a down commodity pricing year. As you know, most of our revenue is generated off minerals. So that's down. If you were to look at fiscal year 15, it was $243.3 million. So that's the type of revenue we're generating. It's heavily dependent on the mineral industry and the commodity price for that. If you want the amount that we generated to the Common School, let me just turn to the right page. So we distributed $139.7 million went to the Common School.
That's in addition to the 100?
No, that's portion part of the 172. So 139.7 of the 172 went to the Common School account.
Well, I'm thinking, and this is just broad strokes policy thinking, we have agencies like Oil and Gas Commission that are supported off their own operations, and I'm wondering if Office of State Lands has ever been in that position. So we're putting general fund dollars into this, and then the money you're generating, which is, you know, multiples of what we're putting in, is going somewhere else.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's true. Somewhere along the line, the state made a policy decision that we were nevertheless going to fund the Office of State Lands and Investments with general funds so that all of the revenue went into those permanent funds. And that's been a policy decision that was made some time ago. I don't know. I do know this, that within our statutes, you have told us that we need to charge fees for certain services that we provide. And this is similar to a statute for the OGCC. I know they're not generally funded, but they have similar language within their statute that says you need to be charging a price that is approximates, the language in the statute says approximates but does not exceed the cost of providing certain services. So that would be an application to trade state land, an application for an assignment of a state land lease, an application, I'm going to forget the list, there's about 11 on there, an application for timber is in there, an application for an easement across state lands. And so that statute does require us to charge those fees, again, in an amount that approximates but does not exceed. And recently, I think it ended up in last year, we took a look at those fees. We undertook a study of those fees to see if we were charging appropriate fees. We determined that we were not, and we raised those fees. And so those amounts do go back to the general fund, the amounts that are on the 11 items listed within that statute. And we did raise those fees recently to assure that we were meeting the goals of that statute. But that is all that this legislature has told us to charge fees.
We have an approximate figure for how much that is.
That amount? That amount would be in the other amount. Hang on. I probably do. Mr. Chairman, it's going to sound shockingly low. That amount in fiscal year 2016 was right around $3,000. But we did start tracking that. We did. The important thing, I think, for us to note was we did raise those fees recently, and we committed to the Board of Land Commissioners at that time that we would be more proactive. Those fees hadn't been raised in probably 30 or 40 years. We would be more proactive in looking at those fees and making sure we're charging folks the fees that this legislature has directed us to do. So we're going to have that on a $3,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bridget, if I may, you had referenced that state land preservation enhancement account on page 20. Can you help me through that just a little bit? Because I wasn't tracking how the funds came into that other than in 2005 we put $750,000 in there. But then in the last paragraph of that subsection there, it says that we've spent $4.7 million with another $1.3 million committed. So have we been putting additional funds into that annually, and is that part of the budget or those general fund dollars? Tell me. It originally came out of the permanent mineral trust fund.
It was the school money. Yeah, school Mr. Money. Chairman, Representative Larson, it was originally comprised of the school foundation account and a little bit of general fund. The part that came out of the school foundation account was supposed to be tracked only to school trust lands. Again, as I keep mentioning, we have a few parcels of land that we're looking after for other purposes than school purposes. And so it was comprised primarily of school foundation account monies and then in part general funds. And I think the best way to describe this was we had started to see these issues where there was something that needed to be done on state land, but we otherwise didn't have budget to get it done. So back in 2005, we proposed to the legislature that perhaps we could start an account that took care of those projects. Now, what the legislature provided or instructed us at that time was, yes, they would fund us $750,000 at that time, but they didn't want it to become part of our standard budget. They wanted it to be an exception request from us all the time. So it never became part of our standard budget. It's something that we come and request every time we make a budget proposal, an exception request, because, and I think my understanding, it was at a time before I was here, but my understanding was, and this makes sense, that the legislature just didn't want to provide us with a pot of money to play with, if that's what they wanted to say, and they very much wanted us to be proactive in reporting what we had done with that money. So again, the folks that have been on the Joint Agriculture Committee knows that every time we're in front of Joint Agriculture, we present a comprehensive report of the projects that we have spent that money on. And so while originally in 2005 it was $750, that has continued. And so that's why you see the total dollar amount down there be higher than the $750. Yep. That's tracking all of the projects that we were able to do. And as you noted, we have some encumbered and those projects aren't done yet. But we continually make an exception request for those monies. Last time we requested a little bit less than we do trying to be proactive in managing our budget. It didn't help the general fund a whole bunch because, as I noted, the primary source of that funding is the school foundation account.
So, Mr. Chairman, if follow up on that, would it be – well, I guess it would be whatever. I'm just thinking where the schools primarily benefit from the funds generated off that, and we're trying to protect those lands to get the higher value, perhaps we ought to use some of that revenue generated off of them, those lands to take care of those problems as they arise rather than perhaps doing general fund. You'd still have to request that, but we could maybe do that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, yeah, as I note, a lot of it doesn't come from the general fund. The vast majority comes from the school foundation account, which we put money into from the funds that we generate.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Bridget. Thanks. A few more follow-up questions on that. Could you get back to us what percentages are coming out of each one, which is out of the common school and the general, or maybe you have it at your fingertips, the two differences?
Mr. Chairman, let me, if I may, clarify the question. You mean for the trust preservation and enhancement?
Yeah, where the breakdown's coming between. We've got the 750, so...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, that amount is in school foundation account. If you look at that over time, $288,192. Mm-hmm. So this is that amount was from the school foundation account, and the general fund amount was $26,667. That's for this biennium, 17-18, I'm sorry.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, so it is primarily school foundation account.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. You said a good part of it's federal match. What part of these are federal match and what part of them are not?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I did say that. When we have projects that we can use for federal match, we try to do that. Primarily, those end up being timber stand improvement projects. And we are able to match those 50-50. That report I didn't bring to tell you over time how much we've done that. But our timber stand improvement projects go just about at 50-50, 50 federal, 50 from our trust preservation enhancement.
Chairman,
but I could get that number for you.
Yeah.
We could over time total how much has come, how much we've been able to match.
Perfect.
That report I didn't bring. I'm sorry.
Two last kind of little lines. You want? Back to weed and pest, you guys cut the funding out. How much did you cut out on it, and how are we controlling the weeds on our state lands without that funding now?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, that was one of the ways that we thought we could reduce general fund money. And the reason I did that, if I could explain, was, first of all, that was a source of funding that was not interwoven with our other funding and our other programs. It was a pot of money that I could look at and all general funds and say, could I do something with that? And so I did recommend that we could cut part of the – I recommended actually cutting the whole thing, which would have been $700,000. The reason I did that was it is a program intended to control weed and pests on state lands. And within our agency, I thought there were other ways that we could deal with weeds on state land. We could identify other pots of money to pay for that, one being this trust preservation and enhancement account. That specifically listed within the projects that we can use is weed and pests. So we thought we could transfer some of that to the transfer some of that to the trust preservation and enhancement account. The second thing I note is within our grazing lease, it specifies that grazing lessees are required to manage weeds on state lands. And so we thought we could seek a little better enforcement there and have our grazing lessees helping us there. The third would be we knew there were other pots of money. In particular, we had been in contact with Bob Budd, and some of the projects that he does would include weeds on state lands. And so we did suggest that in these tough budget times, we could find that source of money elsewhere. Now, you all put $300,000 back in that program. So we had $300,000 that we are administering right now, and we're using that as we would manage state weeds on state trust lands. Obviously, the things that take priority for us would be first special management areas. The statute, the only place that we are required to pay for, I mean, obviously we want to be a good neighbor and take care of weeds on state lands, but the only place we are required to pay by statute is special management areas. So those went to the top of the list. Then the next would be vacant lands, where we have no lessee out there controlling weeds for us. So we would direct the money to those folks. And so far we've seen, and then actually use what I talked about, Bob Budd and his agency to control state lands weeds on state lands. And he's done some of those projects that have controlled the weeds. We let all the counties know that there was a cut in that amount of funding. And we've actually seen them be very judicious in the projects that they recommend to us, but we are using that money to the best of our abilities and handing it out. We've handed out, I'm not finding the page exactly now, I brought it, but a little under half, I would say.
So you're
or a little under a quarter.
So you've still got money left.
We still have money left. We intend to use it for the full biennium.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I kind of want to understand the flow of the money. So the money you generate goes into the permanent school land account. That's some of that, most of that. So whatever percentage that is, you gave us the numbers. But then this money that comes back to this Trust Land Preservation Enhancement Program, is that some school foundation dollars? No school foundation dollars there?
Mr. Chairman, let me clarify or make sure I'm understanding the question you're asking. So first, the money we generate goes one of two places primarily. It goes either to the permanent land fund, depending on what lands those are. So primarily, let's talk primarily common school. It goes to either the corpus fund. So those would be anything that would be a depleting asset goes to the corpus fund. So all your mineral royalties going to the corpus. There's also the permanent income fund. So some of that money would go to the income fund and be immediately available for the legislature to appropriate for school purposes. So a non-depleting revenue would go to the permanent income fund. So that would be your grazing lease fees, our special use lease fees. Anything that's not permanent is generally how I would describe that. Those are the places we place the revenue that we generate. We aren't actually generating revenue to put in this trust preservation and enhancement account. You all appropriate money for us. We come, we ask for an appropriation and exception request, usually $750,000, for the biennium. We come and request that as an exception request. You appropriate from the school foundation account and a little bit of general fund the money for us to use for those projects. But we are not returning any revenue to the trust preservation and enhancement account. That always comes from an appropriation from you. Am I understanding what your question was then?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, thank you. That's kind of what I thought I was saying, but I guess I didn't say it.
No, I just wanted to make sure I understood.
So I guess, and I'll ask Don the question, so that income account versus the money that flows from that money generated to either the permanent account or that income account, there would be – that income account would get far less than what's generated to the permanent account, I would assume.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. I think we're estimating around $18,000 or $18 million per year directed to the income account, which goes on to support schools.
And then, Mr. Chairman, even though I went through this, so explain to me, does that go directly into school foundation program, that income account, or is it appropriated out of – does it have some string that moves it around through a –
Mr. Chairman, and the department can correct me, but that goes first to the common school land income account by constitution. Then it is immediately transferred to the school foundation program. It resides in the school foundation program, is appropriated for those purposes. In the event you have a year where there is revenue in excess of expenditures, which you've had over the past decade, you could argue that some of those funds then flowed into savings, but we tend to argue, because money is fungible, that the FMRs, federal mineral royalties, which are not required to go to schools, is the dollars that actually went into savings, and that way you can argue that these funds actually went to teachers and supplies at the school district level.
So one other question for you, Don, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay. This revenue, can you divert streams of that revenue, because it's supposed to go to schools. So can you put it back into the agency? So this question of whether you can you divert that revenue and just place it back into some kind of operation of the agency, or does it just have to go to schools?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'd express some caution, but stay that you have. Right, so you have appropriated, I think the testimony was $288,000, for example, back into the land preservation of the department. We're actually showing about $400,000 per biennium of this revenue stream you are intercepting and directing to some activities other than K-12. But I would express some caution about that.
And that's, Mr. Chairman, $400,000 a biennium?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I believe it's $392,800 per biennium.
Thank you.
And a follow-up on that question, Dom, where does that money go, the $392,000? Is there supposed to be kind of a trade-off that's going on, or a...
Mr. Chairman, that is the Office of State Lands, Trust Lands Preservation and Enhancements. So it's going back into the management of those school lands.
Bridget, just to clarify, all of that money we've talked about, you also have other trust lands other than the school lands, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, that is correct.
Okay. A rough percentage. How much is school land? How much is all the other, like the penitentiary permanent land fund, the fish hatchery one, and the rest?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, the percentage is 86% is common school.
Okay.
The rest is made up of the various amounts.
Okay, we're running short of time.
Mr. Chairman, I don't. the next one then would be show on page. Our next unit is our unit, our grants and loans unit, and the reduction we have there shows in on page 33. That amount is $5,350. Again, our grants and loans unit would be taking care of the various grant and loan programs that this legislature has set up and placed in our office to run. Those would be things like the our mineral royalty grant program, our our farm loan program, our municipal waste cease and transfer program, our countywide consensus program, the programs that you have created and asked our office to run, and we're taking care of those. Again, the cut that you see us suggest in this unit is one of the governor's enterprise reductions that I have talked about. I could answer any questions about the grant and loan section.
Mr. Chairman.
The funding for those programs generally come through another agency like YDOT for aeronautics and DEQ for the cease and transfer, and then you guys administer them. Do I have my head around that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, it's kind of a mix. That's true for cease and transfer and the aeronautics that you've pointed to. But farm loan program, no, that's money that you've indicated of from the permanent funds that we should be loaning out. Mineral royalty grant, those are coming to directly in our budget.
And so, Mr. Chairman, so let's just go to aeronautics. So YDOT, the funding streams through YDOT to approve it, and then YDOT administers the funds that have been approved. Is that correct? Is that how because they're out making sure that there's compliance and determine whether how.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, this one is a little bit of a mix. This program was originally in my office. It then went to YDOT to administer, and then in 2013, the legislature returned it to our office. It provides that the board is the one that will do essentially what I would call the financial analysis of whether we think folks can pay back the loan and take a look at those sort of things. But, yes, we do work with YDOT to take care of things like, because we don't have engineers on staff and we don't have that sort of staff, to take care of looking at the projects themselves and making sure that they're complied with, the parameters of the application that they presented to us are complied with.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no further questions in our grant and loan unit, I would turn to our next reduction and the next unit in there. That would be our that would appear on page 42. And this would be our
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Can I go back to grants and loans there? On our cease and transfer stuff there on 31, on page 31, and you talk about the board not to exceed 75% of the total cost there in that first paragraph. I thought we changed that last year in House Bill 10.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, you did. The narratives that were taken from this were, nobody changed their narratives when we presented the reductions. They were the narratives that were presented with our budget when we presented it in the first instance. So it would have been prior to you adopting that. But okay. You did, in fact, change that, and we are allowed to now grant, provide 100% of the funding. And we have, in fact, provided 100% of the funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, then next is 42 is where our next reduction appears, and that's in our field services unit. Field services unit is exactly what you would think field services is. They're the folks out there in our agency that are able to do inspections, to go out to the field to see folks, to inspect our parcels. And it also includes our appraisal staff. And so they're the folks that would go out and look at our land and see what should it be rated for grazing, or do we have a problem on this section, or look at mineral leases and our wells out there. So that's getting taken care of through our field services division. We recommend a reduction of $43,980 to our field services unit, and this amount is also a governor's enterprise reduction.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. So this question, Mr. Chairman, is kind of build up over time, and it's something I see in every agency that kind of bothers me. And that's there's really never cuts to 100 series, and in your agency that seems to be very apparent. And this is just an example of that. And so at some point, and it could be at the end, if you just kind of explain the philosophy behind continuing to cut either flow-throughs or programs or services and not cutting people, I'd like to hear the answer to that. Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to address it now, if that's all right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, in our particular agency, when I logically thought about the cuts we should make, two things were primary in my mind. The first would be, what do you do when you're in a budget crunch? And in my mind, there's two things that you do. One, you cut expenses. And that's something that this legislature is working very hard to do, and every executive branch agency is working very hard to do, to cut expenses and try to preserve money. But the second thing you do, and at the same time, and I think equally important, is you preserve any revenue that you can generate. And my agency is, in fact, a revenue-generating agency and not a secondary, if we put it in a economic model, how much do we think we would generate in a straight-up hard dollars to state funds revenue-generating agency. And when I think about that, I think the ways that I generate revenue, though, my ability to do so is directly related to the people and the resources that I have to generate that revenue. I think about an example would be over the last fiscal year, we were able to increase our special use leasing revenue by $1.3 million. And that is $1.3 million that will go into the income fund every year for the term of those special use leases. And the term of those special use leases is generally 25 years. So I will generate, or our agency will generate, $1.3 million additional dollars from fiscal year 16. And how did we come up with those dollars? We came up with those dollars through having our field folks out. The best example I have would be through mineral companies. We had our field folks out inspecting our parcels, and you know what they found on our parcels? They found various things from mineral companies that were not part of the oil and gas lease. So you would find a compressor station, or you would find a gathering station that they had placed on a state parcel because it's easier to deal with the state than the federal government, and so they would place it there, and they would put minerals through those facilities that were not state minerals, which means they had no right to do it without paying. So I've got my inspectors out there. They're finding these instances, and we get them under a special use lease. At the same time, we finally were able to get all of our appraisal staff fully staffed in our office. And the other thing they're able to do then is market analysis. How much are we able to charge people for special use leases? Leases that are not agriculture and leases that are not mineral. But if I don't have those people and I don't have the resources to send them out looking for it, I'm not able to generate that revenue. So to me, it made sense to look to other areas first, because you want to protect the sources of revenue that you have. And so we did. We looked to those other areas first. The second thing that was primary in my mind when we made the decisions that we made was we're an agency that has constitutional responsibilities. Not that any responsibilities are responsibilities you don't want to fulfill, but constitutional take a little bit of a primary role in my mind. And we have constitutional responsibility. The Constitution says I'm supposed to use the lands granted to the state to generate revenue for the state. And so my first goal was to protect those constitutional priorities first. And that was to generate revenue from those lands. And so if I was able to find another way to return general money to the state, I tried to do that. It made sense to me logically to do that. The other thing I think about is in 2005 and 2006, we were under what they called a legislative and executive review of the Office of State Lands and Investments. And one of the recommendations that task force made to us was to increase our staffing. And they believed that we needed to increase that staffing to meet our constitutional mandates. That's what they suggested to us. At that time, our staff level was 98 people. They suggested we increase that by 10 to be able to meet our constitutional mandates. We now have staff of 94 people. So we have 4 people less than the staffing level we had in 2005 and 2006 when it was recommended by a joint legislative executive task force to increase our staffing by 10. So I kept all of those things in my mind when I was trying to determine the cuts to make. And those are why I made the decisions that I made. You're talking primarily about the cut that would be up next for us to talk about, pass-through money. And that is the biggest cut that you see recommended from my agency to make. That appears on page 48. We recommend cutting, the amount of the reduction that we recommend there is $10,879,689. And that is in 600 series money. And so that's comprised of, and I'm just going to round these numbers, $8.5 million in federal funds, $1 million in general funds, and $1 million in other funds, which are water development funds. But to understand why I suggest making that cut, I think it's important to understand what the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Program is. The Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Program, in concept, was this. The federal government decided back in the 90s that they would create these revolving funds in each state. And what they would do is they would provide capitalization money to each state to start growing these funds, that each state could then have a fund that it could loan out to communities that were generally providing publicly owned water systems. They could loan them out to communities within the state to meet the purposes of the Safe Drinking Water Act, to generally provide healthy, clean water to the citizens of the state. And so since that time, they'd been providing what we would call a capitalization grant. 80% of that comes from the federal government. We have to match it 20% state money. And the concept is, at the point in time where they stopped providing those capitalization grants, each state would have their own fund that they could perpetually use in perpetuity to fund these types of projects, because loan funds would be coming back in. You would loan them out to these communities at below market rates. They would build their project. They would then pay the loan back with the interest. The interest and the loan payments could then be used again for other projects in the state. And so those capitalization grants were originally supposed to stop in 2003. They were supposed to cease. They haven't, and there's no talk that they will. So they continue to provide, the EPA continues to provide those capitalization grants. At the time we prepared this, we had in our fund $119.5 million sitting there waiting to be loaned. That doesn't include amounts that were already loaned out. That doesn't include obligated funds that people just hadn't drawn. That was $119 million sitting in that pot of money for people to use. And I view that as a good thing, actually. I think that's a nice spot of money to have in an account in case people have drinking water projects to do. But the EPA does not view that as a good thing. The EPA views that as a horrible problem. They view that as you not timely and expeditiously using your funds. So they contact us on multiple occasions and tell us we've got a problem. We have to get that balance down. We have to reduce that balance by the end of 2018. And we tried to think of ways to reduce that balance. We have taken steps to reduce that balance, but we simply don't have communities that want to use that money right now. So one of the things we did was amend our rules to allow for refinancing of other types of loan at a lower interest rate. And we had four or five communities take advantage of that, but that did not significantly lower our balance. We also started telling folks, because some of the free money, if you want to call it, that we have to give would be mineral royalty grant money. You don't have to pay that back, and people would prefer to have that money. We started telling them, if you're eligible for a drinking water program loan, We're not recommending you for funding for mineral royalty grants. We really tried a lot of ways. We went out to the communities to try to get them to take this money, and they simply wouldn't. Our balance began to grow, and in part our balance grew because we continued to take these capitalization grants, and they count against us. So the EPA tells us, well, we're going to take measures against you if you don't do something to reduce this balance. So we had two problems in my mind. We've got the EPA telling us our balance is too big, and we've got the state of Wyoming's budget, which needs general funds. So one of the things we thought we could do is instead of the amount that you appropriate to us, the $20 million, is split into two capitalization grants. You take one each year. One of the things we could do was not take one of those yearly grants. And the reason that made sense to me, or the things that you, the perks or the benefits of doing that are, one, you continue to grow your fund, but you do it at a level that is sustainable by the state of Wyoming, by the communities that want to use that money. Two, if you take one capitalization grant, you're still able to use administrative funds and not use our own funds to administer this program. So it makes sense to take one of those capitalization grants. The next would be, if we did it ourselves, we wouldn't have some of the repercussions that the EPA suggests will come down on our program if we don't take action. And those are, one, they're not going to give you any further grants. And that probably is a wash because we're saying don't take one of our grants, right? But on top of that, they would say if we don't sort out this problem, we're not going to be able to use the grants that they've already given us. So the $119 million that I've got sitting in that pot there, they tell you they won't let you use that. Which doesn't make a lot of sense, but that is in fact what they tell you. And then you would not have administration. We'd have to start using our own funds to administer this program. And so it made sense to us to suggest we could skip every year, or every biennium, we could only take one instead of two. And that would help solve both of our problems. The general fund problem in the state of Wyoming and my problem, our agency's problem, with the EPA. We did contact the EPA and asked them what they thought of this plan. And they suggested to us that they believed this to be a reasonable solution to our high balance problem. Or they call it unliquidated obligations, or ULOs. That's what we use to speak to that problem, the terminology we use to speak to that problem. The other...
Just a quick follow-up on
sure.
that. Two things. How much do we have available? Or, I mean, one of the other options is you just make less state grant dollars available so that you force them into using the grant fund dollars. So have you considered that, and how much is available? And two, what interest rates or what loan requirements are there tied to those federal dollars?
Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure I'm understanding with grant monies. We are already telling folks that if they qualify for a drinking water program, they can't have grant money from us. So we feel like we've addressed that situation. We otherwise use the mineral royalty grant program for other projects than these drinking water projects. As far as the interest rate, it's 2.5%. But you're hitting, I think you're speaking a little to possibly why we don't want, why communities don't want this money or have shied away from it a little. It is that. It comes with federal strings. I think that's what you're implying. It does come with federal strings. It comes with Davis-Bacon, American Steel, environmental studies, and fairly onerous reporting. And so some of our smaller communities, that reporting is hard for them, and so they would prefer to find their money other places, and I don't blame them for that. I simply say that's part of what contributes to our problem. We're having a hard time getting our communities to take it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your description of the drinking water revolving fund, you talk about your administrative funding ending at the end of 17-18, that 4%. And I think last year we had addressed that on the clean water deal by putting in I think it's 1% or something.
Half a percent.
1% biennium or something like that. So is that kind of the plan moving forward to where we don't eat into the corpus of this drinking water fund is to at some point implement an administrative fee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, this one already had one. If you'll recall in those discussions when we implemented it on the clean water program, we kept saying the drinking water program already has one. So we do collect a fee there. When we talk about that fee running out, we anticipated that to be from the federal government. So we're stockpiling some administrative fee, if you want to use the term stockpiling. But if they cut off the administrative fees that they're giving to us, we have to go to that sooner than we would have intended. And that only lasts, if we were to burn through that rate at the current rate we're burning through it, that would only last 3.5 biennium.
And what percent is our administrative fee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that one is also 0.5%. You could look at raising that one, but currently it's at 0.5%.
Thank you.
So then just a follow-up on the total cut that you had through this program to state funds is $1.5 million.
It's, Mr. Chairman, it is $1,070,000.
So it's $1 million. So my question is, how is this cut going to be sustainable through your agency through the next biennium? It looks to me at best it will be one. If you do take the loan once a year, it's only going to happen once each biennium. So just could you address that?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. We believe that this is sustainable in as much as you would have that every biennium. Typically, so we would take it this year. We would take our capitalization grant in 17. So we would only be requesting from here on out half the amount that we have typically requested. Typically, we have requested from you, I'm going to round the numbers, $2 million for two capitalization grants. And we don't intend that just to be in this biennium. We ran some models, and we've talked to the EPA about this, that if we continue, if that was the strategy going forward, that we only take one of the capitalization grants that we're eligible for into the future, that we did an average here. Let me get that number so it's in my mind. If you use the 10-year average, meaning the amount we've loaned out, the amount we've had coming in, if that is our strategy to take only one each biennium, at the end of 2026, that would be the biennium that we just chose to go to. At the end of 2026, we would still have $117 million available to loan out to people. So we think it's sustainable in the fact that that would be our strategy going forward.
But you're not going to be able to sustain. I mean, this is 1 year of this biennium, so it's only going to be $1 million per biennium that you're saving, right? In terms of general fund dollars that you're returning back to the general fund.
That is correct. It would be $1 million from this unit every biennium.
Every biennium. And so that means it's not biennialized, and so we still need another 4% from your agency in order to comply with the 8% cuts from the governor's overall budget.
We have some additional cuts that Mr. Krapser could speak to. That was the end of the land. Okay. Ones, unless there's further questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have one. Specifically the drinking water, and this might be out of bounds. Chairman can rein me in if he needs. Would this fund be better administered potentially out of the Water Development Commission? Could they potentially be able to get it pushed where it gets used better?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I don't believe so. We already have we have partners in this program. We've got DEQ and Water Development helping us with this program already. They like to keep their program separate for the programs that they are running. But we interface with them already to know the projects that are out there. We already have them as a partner helping us with this program. And so it makes sense, I think, to remain with our office. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions on my portion, I could turn it over to the state forester to talk about the reductions that you would see in forestry-type budgets.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, we would start on forestry on page 50.
Great. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, forestry is a little bit different animal within state lands. We have basically three programs. We have our trust land management, the timber sales, and the health of our forested trust land. We also have what we call assistance forestry, helping private landowners on the approximately 2 million acres of private forest land in the state, helping communities with trees, helping local fire departments and all that sort of stuff on training. And then we also have our fire management part of our program. So we're kind of three different major things. On forest management, as I said, of the 3.6 million acres of trust land, about 260,000 acres are forested acres. We manage those both with timber sales, fuels reduction projects, forest health projects, timber stand improvement projects. We also provide assistance to private landowners on about 2 million acres of private forest land across the state. And then we also work with ranchers and conservation districts on about an additional 1.1 million acres of non-forested land that it's highly erodible land where one of the best ways to keep the soil there is for planting trees. Used to call it windbreak-type programs. I mentioned community forestry. There's 99 incorporated villages and cities in the state. We work with all of them as far as, especially on forest health problems on their trees in their cities. We've all heard about mountain pine beetle, but we also have a lot of invasives moving across the country that really impact these cities and towns' trees. Our forest health program is really an overarching program looking at all the forest health across the state.
Representative Larson.
So is that an overlap between weed and pest? Because I thought weed and pest would be working with cities on pests and that affect trees in communities.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the work we do with cities and cities are probably prior to anything weed and pest would be. It's on species, picking the right species, how to plant them, how to care for them, that sort of thing with trees. We also have what we call the Forestry Conservation Program. It's a cooperative program we do with Department of Corrections out of the Honor Camp up in Newcastle, where we run inmate crews that provide forest management activities on state lands, do a lot of community service projects, and then help provide a fire response force for the summer for us. Our other big part of our program, and it's actually, you'll see, is separated, part of it separated out in our budget, is our fire management program. Statutorily, we have the direct responsibility for the 3.6 million acres of trust land. We also have what we call cooperative responsibility on the 27 million acres of private land in the state, assisting the counties on fire management activities. And we also work cooperatively with the federal agencies on all wildfires in the state. When you move to page 53 of the budget, we have the governor's enterprise reductions. Then the next reduction that we have is a $54,000 reduction in 100 series, general fund 100 series. We get a significant amount of federal grants from the Forest Service to help with some of these programs, to apply these programs. We looked at those numbers real close and felt that we were able to shift on two positions about $54,000 of federal money into 100 series and thus reduce the general fund 100 series. The next budget reduction we have, and some of these, I apologize, Mr. Chairman, are fairly small numbers, but they add up when you take them collectively. The next reduction is we looked at our vehicle fleet, and we got rid of six vehicles, which is about a $40,000 savings for the biennium. The six vehicles that we looked at were mainly here in Cheyenne. The consequences of that with an active fire season like we had last year and people running all over the state, we ran out of vehicles and people had to use some POVs and we had to steal some of Bridget's vehicles to have enough vehicles around, but it's something we can manage and handle. So that's the next reduction there. The next reduction on this, we're on page 54 now, is we took $25,000 out of in-state travel, which cuts us down pretty close on that. We also took $25,000 out of overall supplies out of that particular budget. Moving on, Mr. Chairman, jumping over to page 57, we move into our fire budget. Several years ago, we separated a lot of our fire responsibilities out. Sorry?
Yeah, just one second. Representative Brooker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hey, Bill, in code 7813, your cooperative forestry assistance, and 7110, which of those is the cooperative agreement with the BLM? Is that 7110?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, the people sitting behind me say yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, follow up. So that's how much money we're making off of that cooperative agreement, so it's still making money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that is the amount of money that the Forest Service, on that particular project, as you recall, it's a cooperative, for folks that don't know, we have a cooperative forester position that the legislature approved last biennium to embed a forester in the BLM office in Rawlins to help the BLM get their timber program jump-started, to help support the Saratoga Mill, to work on forest health issues. It was a very, very successful program. It's so much so that the Forest Service wanted to be involved in it. So we have an agreement that $77,552 is the amount of money that the U.S. Forest Service is paying towards the salary for this biennium. So now the cooperative project is a forester that is partially paid by the state, partially paid by the Forest Service, and a lot of infrastructure supplies by the BLM to work on BLM ground, Forest Service ground, private ground, and state ground in that area.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. Bill, about how much money has that made for the state? The last time we talked, it looked like it was a nice return.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, money for the state is, I mean, we haven't got any income from it. It isn't money that's gone to general fund. However, that position to date has produced about 12 million board feet of timber that has gone into the Saratoga sawmill, help provide jobs there. So for Carbon County, for the Saratoga area, it's actually the return has been several million dollars.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, looking at our fire budget, several bienniums ago, we split a lot of our fire budget out because it has federal money, other federal monies in it, and it does get a little bit confusing. We also split some of our employees out. So now in our fire budget, and I refer to page 57, we have of our 47 permanent employees, we have four of them that are in the fire budget, and 43 of them that are in the state forestry operations budget. I'm sorry, excuse me, five of them and 42 of them. And we have four seasonal employees in the fire budget. Those seasonal employees are our Helitac fire crew. That's also, if you look on the next page 61, if you look under personal services, the $637,000 in there is entirely for our helicopter contract. The four seasonal employees support the Helitac system. This last year, we responded to over 43 fires with the state Helitac. I'd love to be able to say that it quantified that we saved X million dollars by rapid response. Those are tough numbers to quantify. We do have about a 96-97% initial attack success ratio which is really helps with our fire cost.
Co-chair. Two questions. The bulk of your cuts are in this 200 series supportive services. And how much, what is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's reductions in vehicles, reductions in state travel, reductions in supplies. That's all in the what we call the supportive services 200 series.
Well, the vehicles were like 40,000 and...
Vehicles were 40,000. In-state travel was 25. Supplies was 25.
So that's still totals less than 100,000. You've got a reduction of 700.
Senator Burns, that's in the fire budget. I'm sorry. I would jump back to the forestry budget. The 700,000 in the fire budget, the reductions is in 200 series, it's payments for wildfires. It's basically a third of our state land fire suppression budget. We felt we could cut the dollars out of that. The consequence of that is that it, if we do have a large fire season on state land fires, we have to dip into the emergency fire suppression account if we run over the remaining budget of the fire suppression on state lands.
And, Mr. Chairman, the other question I have is you have five FTEs in fire. What do they do in the winter?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, the five FTEs that we have in fire are not specified firefighters. The four seasonals are specified firefighters. The five FTEs we have in fire are some of our mechanics at our shop who continue to build fire engines, continue to, for the counties, continue to work on all those projects all winter long. One of our fuels management people who continues to work on fuels projects across the state all winter long. Our aviation forester who doesn't just work on the aviation projects for the summer, but also on contracting and on all rules changes from the federal agencies, also does all of our radio systems, takes care of all of that. So they're in the winter, they get focused really on fire management, fire suppression in the summer. On the winter, they catch up on everything else from the radio systems to, for example, on our helicopter contract, we have a new RFP that the RFP was opened yesterday, and our aviation people are obviously involved in that. So it's to support, I think the other position that's listed there, Senator Burns, is our fire trainer, who spends the whole winter with rural fire departments around the state training, making sure people have their qualifications for the next fire season.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
So before we go on, I just noticed that we're I just want to tell Todd we're not likely to get to you until noon, and so you're welcome to not hang around if you don't want to.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Sure.
Would you like us to be here at noon?
No, actually, it's 12:45.
12:45?
12:45, because we have caucus, and so we'll run and eat and come back.
All right.
Okay, so. All right.
Thank you.
I think the next was Representative Swartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have a deduction in grants to county fire departments. That's $8,000 per county. Is that just a general grant, or is that tied to specific operations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swartz, the reduction in grants to counties, the $8,000 per biennium per county, is to fire departments to support their general operations. We were using it for match money with some federal grant money that we have. We have some other ways to grant it. On that particular cut, we polled the fire advisory board, which is made up of county fire wardens around the state, and asked them, which would you like to see us cut? And they all agreed that was probably the better thing to go. So that is the $185,000 reduction. As I said, the other big reduction to our fire budget, the $700,000 dollars is in payments for fires out of our state trust land fire suppression budget. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick overview. We do have one other budget that we don't have in the supplemental, our emergency fire suppression account budget. I would just touch on that real quickly. After the 2012 fire season, that account, for folks that don't know, is a account that the counties pay into based on their valuation, that allows them to request that account for large fire to help defray the cost of large fires in their counties. Since the inception of the account back in the early 80s, the legislature has actually put about 90% of the money in the account, because we've had some horrendous fire seasons. Last year was a big fire season, but, fire season of 2012, the legislature put about $20 million into that account. We were able to, with the Oil Creek fire up in Weston County, we were able to settle the lawsuit with Black Hills Power on that. We were actually able to put about $4.4 million back into the suppression account that we recovered. We've also used that account, or you all have used that account, for some of our bark beetle projects around the state. So we had a balance of about $24 million going into the beginning of this last fire season. I do need to report to you, we had a very significant fire season this last year, and we did spend approximately, and I hate to say approximately to an Appropriations Committee, but all the fire bills are still not totally in, but we committed approximately $12 million of the account last year on fires. So moving forward, starting this next year, we'll probably have a balance heading into this next fire season of around $12 million in the suppression account, as far as in the corpus of the account. Mr. Chairman, that's pretty much all I have on forestry and fire.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Doxer.
Bill, you mentioned you got $2 million that you use on private lands. This is every year, and where's it at? Where can I find it in there? We're putting $2 million out on private lands for assistance?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, I said we have 2 million acres of private land that we help do support.
I'm sorry,
on.
I misunderstood that.
We have about, with federal grants that we get about between $1 million and $1.5 million a year total of all of our federal grants. Some of those go out through the different counties for grants for fuels projects. We have several projects in Lincoln County that have been paid for with the federal money. While I'm talking federal money on private land, I'll go ahead, and then I have to address an earlier question.
Quick clarification, if I could, Mr. Chairman. So everything we're spending on private land is federal money, everything.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, we also have the bark beetle money that you guys appropriated last year, have for the last several years. This biennium, you had appropriated $1 million. That money comes out of the fire suppression account. So we had $500,000. Those grants, the first for each year, that $500,000 has gone out mainly to conservation districts, and that's a mixture of private land and public lands that money's spent on.
All right. That'll do. Thanks.
Okay, anything else? I've got a few follow-up questions if no one else does. I just want to make sure we run them. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I could, I want to go back to the end of the lands section. Senator Driscoll had a question about putting the clean water fund, having it run under the water development. And just because I'm new at this and the water area is not my area, and maybe this is even kind of for Don, or I'm not sure, but so would it be feasible to, if the feds seem to have all this excess money that they want, that they're unhappy that we're not spending, to substitute some of that money in the water development accounts, which we're funding through severance tax money, and then release the severance tax money for other uses? I mean, is that I don't know, you know, with the grant, right? And I'm not, obviously not asking you about the budgetary move necessarily, but with the federal requirements and the kind of projects that we fund out of water development, is that something that could happen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, not really as far as changing the federal funds to our water development. No, that couldn't happen because of the requirements of the drinking water program. So it has, the federal funds that we're getting have to be spent on those types of projects. Projects that meet, the criteria of the Safe Drinking Water Act and help provide, safe drinking water and protect public health. And it has to be for publicly, administered water systems. So those funds would always have to go to a drinking water program because of the federal requirements for that. One of the things that happens, though, if we don't take this grant, the second half of that match was coming from the water development account. So when we say, look, we wouldn't take one grant that returns $1 million in general fund money, it also returns $1 million to the water development account, which was where the second half of the match came from, which frees up $1 million for water development to use for their projects. And part of the reason, if I could follow up on Senator Driscoll's question, part of the reason I think it's appropriate to keep that program in my office would be, while we get technical assistance already from the Water Development Commission, part of the requirements of this program are very financial in nature. You have to do financial analysis similar to what a bank would do to make sure these communities can pay back and to make sure that we properly are protecting the federal funds. My staff is better prepared for that, or that's the expertise that they have, because we're already doing that sort of analysis for farm loans or JPA loans, and that's the type of expertise we have on our staff. The technical expertise that we need related to this program, meaning is this the type of project that would fit in there? Do their engineering fees seem appropriate? That assistance we already get from DEQ and Water Development. So it makes sense. Then there's pretty large reporting requirements, not only on the communities taking these loans, but on my office related to that. And we do that sort of thing. We're used to that sort of thing. We have the expertise to handle a federal audit and take care of those sort of things related to that program.
Representative Larson.
Bridget, we have a number of state agencies renting state lands. We have a prison, I think, on some state land. We've got a school on some state land. Could we get a list? Do we have such a beast that we could get a list? And kind of how you determine what those leases are, how that process goes, is that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, we do, because of the nature of state trust lands, because they were granted to us in the Constitution for the purpose of generating revenue, and again, we're going to talk in general terms school here, we have to charge for making money for schools, we have to charge pretty much everybody, no matter who they are, a fair market rate, and return that to the permanent school trust fund. That's the nature of trust assets. So we aren't able to give, for instance, Game and Fish a break, or we aren't able to give Department of Corrections a break. So what we do is we would charge them the market rate that we would do that analysis. But yes, I've written it. They're writing a note behind me that we could get a list of all the sedate agencies that we lease to. And generally though, any rent that we're charging a sedate agency is determined the same as rent we're charging anybody.
Anything else? So just to, first of all, could you give me a quick update on the forestry building? I think you're in a level three phase construction. Are you in the design component of it? Where we're at?
Mr. Chairman, we met with the architects last week and with the construction department. They have the design development stage completed. approve the drawings where they were at, and they're moving forward with construction drawings at this point.
So as far as it's probably a little premature to know if we're still on budget on time, right?
Mr. Chairman, it appears right now, and it's probably premature right now, their last cost estimates is they're a little under budget, and they look like they're on time.
Well, that would be too bad. So.
Yeah. That's what they told us last week.
Okay, and then Director Hill, I think you've sensed some interest by a lot of these committee members to learn more about in the past history of why so much general fund dollars are being used for your agency. And I'm just curious about it. And so what I'm thinking of, and I'd like to learn more about it, and I don't want to send our staff to find out more about it. So what I'd like you to do, and you're not going to have a lot of time between now and next week on callbacks, but I think I'd like to know if legislatively through this committee or some other, if they've questioned it in the past, to see what ground has already been tread on that issue and what the issues were and why we've got $25 million in general fund dollars and that it's not self-sustaining through your collected revenues for doing what you're doing. And obviously, we don't want to pull money out of education right now, necessarily. But it's just a history that I'd like to understand a little better.
Sure.
And to provide to us. And then also with regards to the 2005-06 legislative report that talked about whether or not it needed to be funding or not, if you could provide us a synopsis of that. And eventually, I'd like a copy of it, but we're not going to be able to get to that during the budget, during this session, but I think it's something that would be useful for us, and particularly for the folks that will be kind of covering your agency, that will be even more scrutinized during the budget session next year. So just some interesting things that we'd like to learn more about.
Sure. I think I saw my people write a note, so right. We've got that.
The next question is, in terms of the cuts that you totaled about 9.6% budgetary cuts through the governor's enterprise cuts. But I really want to know how those are sustainable and if they are capable of being biennialized, because we're cutting for 1 year and we're thinking, well, we actually need for next biennium, we may need to double that in order to make sure, because we're just, that sounds to me like you're just cutting enough to get that. If you bianalyze that 9.6%, is that going to be 9.6% through the biennium? And so that's perhaps you can give us just a quick note on that we can double check and cross check our numbers. And then the next question then, and probably the last question to you, there's a good chance we're going to cut another 2% out of your budget. Because we're going to need to do it. And so I want to know what your thinking is now on where that's going to happen. And do you have any current vacancies that have been open for a long time and tell us, or you're all filled? And so if you could kind of address those two issues real quickly.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if you sought another 2% from our agency, that would, in fact, have to come from people. Now, we are to the point where there is nothing else. And that would have to, I'm sorry, that would have to come from people. We're to the point in our budget where there is nothing else to cut. So it would, in fact, come from people and would, in fact, affect our operations and our revenue-generating operations. So you would have to look within our priority list, I think, of the things that generate the most revenue. Those would take priority, and we'd start at the bottom. But I think it's important to remember, or at least what you will hear me say if we're asked for those, is all at this point in time, almost all of the people in our agency are being used to generate revenue. But we have taken a look at that, and we could tell you it would affect our operations. There would generally be a slowdown. There would be a slowdown in us getting farm loan dollars out the door. There would be a slowdown in us getting special use leases taken care of, which is an area that I would very much like to pursue as far as revenue generation. It would be a slowdown in doing audits. And making sure that we're paid the amounts that we are owed. We would do less audits. Last year, our audit department collected $10 million additional dollars through the audits that they looked at, but we would be doing less of those. It would be an effect on operations, but it would have to come from people.
And so then you mentioned with regards to the $750,000, you were initially recommended cutting all of it, and you talk about there's $300,000 left in the weed special revenue funds that we had provided to you.
Mr. Chairman, when you put the $300,000 back to us, it didn't go back in our standard budget. So it's not – we believed it was not something we could suggest you cut again. It was an exception request. It's not in our standard budget now. Sure. But that $300,000 would be there if that was something you were interested in.
Well, thank you. We appreciate I'm sorry, I missed –
I'm sorry.
I take that.
You said you earn $171 million. That's over the biennium?
Mr. Chairman, that was the fiscal year. The $172 that I said that we earned, that's was for fiscal year 16.
So that's annual?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. And the expense budget numbers we're looking at is biannual?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question for me, Senator Burns?
The expenses we're looking at here is a biannual figure. The $171 million you're talking about is an annual figure. So for a biannual figure there, we're probably talking closer to $350 million.
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct. Again, that's very dependent on the price of oil and gas and coal.
Okay, conservatively call it $300 million. Can you give me a very rough percentage of how much goes to the school foundation, how much goes to the Common School Land Fund?
The breakdown I could give you, Mr. Chairman, I pulled these
very off. Rough ratio or percentage.
Sure. Would be the amount that we send to the permanent fund and the amount that we send to the income fund. So of that $172 million, we spend, again, I'm rounding these numbers, we sent $143 million to the permanent funds. Those would be your corpus funds. And to the income funds, we sent $18.9 million. So that equals, I'm not doing the percentage in my head right there, but.
No, actually, the figures are just as good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We've got about 8 minutes before we got to go hear the goober.
Mr. Chairman, just real quick.
Sure.
Down at $143 million, $18.9 million, where that you split those, is that what? Who sets that?
Mr. Chairman, that would be set by generally the statutes and the Constitution. So in Bridget terms, I talk about them in terms of depleting assets. Go to the corpus fund. So your mineral, your largest source of revenue, or our largest source of revenue, that's your mineral royalty, because you're not getting that back. That goes to the corpus fund. Anything that is renewable or something you would get every year because it's not depleting, so your grazing lease fees, your special use lease fees, that's going to the income fund. That's kind of how I sort it out in my mind, in general terms.
Okay. Anything else? Thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much. Sorry we took so long.
Mr. Chairman,
maybe we should have started
early. Thank you. Thank you for your questions. If you have any follow-ups, let us know.
You bet.